Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you could join us this morning. I'm sorry about yesterday. I went to a wonderful seminar who was conducted by our friend Izzy Kalman, the director of Bullies to Buddies. It was a seven-hour seminar and filled, nonstop filled with information and education in regard to doing something about our kids having trouble socially overcoming things like being bullied. I had decided today already to do a different show, but I want everybody to know that show in regard to what I learned yesterday will be on tomorrow. Today, something else happened to me recently that is very on my mind right now, and I think it's a good idea to discuss it because I think that most of us, not all of us, have pets, and dogs, cats, birds, sometimes a little more exotic, but cats and dogs and birds, I think, are in many of our homes. And they become a part of our family. I think we've had a dog when I was a kid in my parents' home. There was always a dog. And I think my oldest son was only maybe 6 months old the first time I thought we needed a dog in the house to be friends with him. At this stage in my life, I have a dog and a cat. Lily is a rescue cat that had been hit by a car, and my daughter saved her, and she was a Christmas gift. Her name is Lily. She's very, she can be friendly, but most of the time she's absolutely a cat, every sense of the word. She stalks. She creeps. She hides. She comes to let you know when she's hungry. Other than that, she's pretty much on her own. And then we have Chewbacca, who is a little lapsa, apso, dipsy, whipsy. Who knows what he is? He's adorable. He has brown, curly hair and is incredibly friendly and almost too friendly. And he can be kind of a handful. He turned two in September, so he's still a teenager, and he's a very important part of our family. He and my seven-year-old grandson that I talk about on the show a lot are like best buddies. When AJ has nobody else to play with, and sometimes even when he does, he's playing with Chewbacca. Chewbacca runs around the yard with him, plays when he's swinging. He won't come in the pool with us, which is a disappointment, but he loves to sit out there when we're in the pool as well. And very recently, strangers in the house, and he with children. So because he gets so excited and is prone to jumping up on people, and it, because he doesn't run the streets, his nails can get real sharp, even when I cut them. They can get really, really sharp because he doesn't do anything to file them down. So I wasn't here, and my oldest son put him in a bedroom with the teenage boys. And the little girl that was here, because I want to make a note of this as well, because I think one of the other things that we need to talk about eventually is when you are the parent of young children and you go into a home that you know nothing about, it's your responsibility to keep your child under control and watch them. That doesn't happen. We're showing our house to be sold, and families come in and they get looking at the house, and the kids just, you know, run like they've been here forever. And that's what she did. She walked into the bedroom door, and she reached down to pick up Chewbacca, and he's too big for a little person to pick up, and he nipped her on the chin. Now, like I said, he's a very sweet, loving little dog, but he does not like people that can't pick him up. I don't know whether he's got a tender belly. I pick him up all the time, but I'm strong, and I can reach underneath his torso and pick him up with my hands wrapped around his chest. I don't put my little tiny hands in his belly or anything like that to get him picked up. So we, you know, it was just a little puncture wound on the chin, and within 2 days, animal control was here. I couldn't find the shot records. I couldn't find them since we moved from the last house. I don't know where they got packed. They looked up my name at Pet Supermarket and found my name but didn't find the dog's name. So my dog got arrested. So that's where I'm going to leave the story and bring in Shelley so that we can talk about this together. And if any of you have ever had anything along these lines and it's a positive story, I'd love to hear from you. But of course, if it's something that you'd like to air some concerns about, I'd like to hear from you as well at 337-989-0352. You can talk to us and tell us what happened to you. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey. Good to hear you again. I'm very, very, very much looking forward to hearing about Izzy's seminar, and I know that's tomorrow's show, but I'm looking forward to that and hearing a little bit more about how that all went.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was great. And he also handed out workbooks that we can learn a lot from. I mean, it's a very thick, like a textbook. It's paperback, but it's like a textbook for a class, so it's awesome. So I'll share that with you. And everything he did, and there were people there from the sheriff's department, from places like CARP, obviously teachers, counselors. There was all kinds of people in different lines of work there to hear what he has to say about letting our children figure out how to deal with the repercussions of somebody who's being mean to them in school. And his ideas, and he, you know, just like he did with us on the show with the role-playing, he showed everybody, and you could not stump him. And there were a couple people. There was a gentleman who runs a after-school care camp kind of a thing, and he's seen it all, been through it all. And he would come up with some really, you know, really kind of in-your-face things that a kid would do, and never stumped Izzy. So it was great. So, yeah, I look forward to talking about that tomorrow as well.
I wanted to talk
about this because it's so fresh on my mind, you know.
Yeah, and the whole thing is that, you know, I've spoken about this on the show a lot. I'm a big fan of Judge Judy and People's Court now that it's got Judge Million on there. Some of the People's Court judges in the past weren't very good, like when Mayor Koch decided to run the show for a while. He could never keep control of the courtroom. But I really enjoy watching Judge Judy. I enjoy watching Judge Million because they're fair. They don't put up with any nonsense. And one of the things you see all the time are animals' injuries, animals attacking animals and animals attacking children. And in every single case, without fail, it's because either the owner of the animal isn't paying attention or the owner of the child isn't paying attention. People think that because a dog bites you, the dog owner is automatically responsible, and that's not the case. I would say probably two-thirds of the cases were judged against the animal owner, but about a third of the cases were not, because it was the person that got bit or the child that got bit. It was the parent's fault because they allowed them to approach a dog that was, you know, confined. I mean, one person, the dog was on a leash, and their dog got bit, but their dog got bit because they weren't paying attention, and they were on one of those leads that ran out. You know, it's like in a coil, and their little dog ran. They were both on leashes, but the woman she was sidetracked, started talking to somebody. Her little dog runs out, goes up to a bigger dog, and the bigger dog just picked it up to play with it. The woman turned around, started screaming, and then the two dogs panicked. Thank God the little dog, the little dog didn't get killed or anything, but some of those stories are more tragic than that. But in that particular case, the woman was flabbergasted that the judge didn't decide against her. And she says, how can I? She said, what did they do wrong? The people of the other dog didn't do anything wrong. She said, you weren't paying attention to where your little dog was. How can I hold them responsible for that? She said, people, just because a dog bites you or bites your animal doesn't mean it's the dog owner's responsibility. They had to have done something wrong, So that's a big misconception amongst people, that it's automatically the dog that bites responsibility or their family's responsibility. That's not the case. There has to be negligent, So in your particular case, it's a little bit clearer than that because the dog was basically leashed. It was in its own room, and this little girl opened the door. So there's a, and there it goes to the parents, that the parents should have been watching the little girl. How do you enter a stranger's home and not know where your small children are? They're probably getting stuff in your own house. You know what they get into in your own house, don't you? This is what always surprises me. But, but I've seen that in other situations. When I had the ferret rescue, and somebody would be coming here with several small children to adopt a ferret from me, and they'd have one or two of the children with me, and then the third child would be, wandering around my house. Mm-hmm. They could have gotten into the drawer with the knives in it. They could have gotten into anything, If you've got small children and you're in a stranger's home, you need to know where they are, or don't bring them in that stranger's home. Leave them at home with a babysitter.
Well, and of course, I think I even mentioned this the other day. One day, a family was here, and they were a great family. I loved them. But, I found the little boy in my bedroom at my dresser playing with, I have long necklaces and things like that are hanging up on one of those little trees. And I was like, I walk in, and there he is playing with them. It didn't bother me that he was playing with them. All my grandchildren go in there and find that to be, very attractive to be able to see all those long necklaces and everything. But on the same token, I thought to myself, if that was my kid, I'd be, oh, my God, what do you think you're doing? Get out of those people's things. I would be panicking. And
right.
One day a little boy came through and did a jumped over the back of my couch and rolled onto the floor of my couch. And I'm like, and his mother, don't do that again. And I was like, oh, my God, if one of my kids did that, I'd have them by the ear in about 3 seconds. So,
Well, see, one of the things that I've noticed with a lot of parents, and I shouldn't say today because it's been going on for over a decade, probably even longer, is that for some reason – a lot of parents today go from extreme to extreme. They either don't react at all, almost like they're ignoring their child's behavior, or they overreact and freak out. I very rarely see parents that are just like, you better get over here right now. You're not allowed behaving like that. Now stand next to me. Okay, just normal reaction without the, ignoring or, But I keep seeing the two extremes, Now, I've never had kids of my own, but I've had nieces and nephews, and I've taken care of them when they were very, very little. And I was always the fun aunt. I would play with them and stuff like that. But if I ever spoke to them like what I just said, bam, they'd be right next to me, Because it was a I wasn't asking them. I was telling them. And kids will respond to that. But when you ask them, or when you say it in a way like you're complaining, they just ignore you back. So parents that are inconsistent, that will threaten and not follow through, or will let the kid get away with bad behavior, and then all of a sudden go to the other extreme and, lose their minds, those are the kids that tend to be very unruly because they don't have a set pattern of what's acceptable. And this is why parents, a lot of times like that, they really can't keep control of their kids. But just for the record, regardless of what you're going into another person's home for, your children are your responsibility. You need to know where they are, more so in somebody else's house than in your own, because you don't know if a stranger has breakables or an animal behind a closed door. You don't know what's in these other people's homes. You cannot let your children out of your sight unless they're very, very well behaved. Some children that are very young are very well behaved, and they would never touch somebody else's. I mean, I've seen kids like that, very polite, very well behaved. But if you have a kid that's kind of curious, and it's not that they're bad, they're curious. They're kids. That's what kids do, you know. But if you have a child that's very energetic and very curious, you need to know where they are, especially if you're entering somebody's home that may have animals, you know, or that may have valuables laying around. You have to know where your child is. That's your responsibility, not the person's house you're entering.
Well, you'll be interested to know that according to the Florida statutes, regardless of whether it's in your home, on your property, any of those things. Number one, if you have an animal that has never hurt anybody, never done anything, and you don't have a sign that says bad dog, you can still be found completely liable according to the Florida statutes. And can you fight it in a court of law, in a small claims court or something like that? Absolutely, you can, because that is your right as an American citizen. However, the Florida statutes proclaim that the owner of an animal takes complete and sole responsibility for the animal, no matter what the circumstance is. That's the top line of any story. However, like I just said, you do have the right to go to small claims court. You do have the right to fight. However, it's very clearly written, and the Florida statutes were revised not very long ago, according to my legal sources. So it isn't as cut and dried as I thought it would be, but on the same token, there's other things that you need to do, and I'm going to bring these up because if you are renting a home from somebody, their homeowner's insurance will not cover you against any kind of liability like that, so you must have renter's insurance.
Yeah, renter's a lot of people don't realize that. That's a very, very good point, that if you're a lot of people assume that if they're renting from a homeowner that has homeowner's insurance, they can just use it, and that's not the case. That's why renter's insurance was made. You know, the homeowner's insurance is specific for structural damage, not for liability. The liability
right.
is on the tenant, not on the landlord. The landlord's insurance is for property damage, but not for personal liability. And that's where a lot of people don't get that.
Well, on homeowner's insurance, there is liability, but the homeowner has to have had the liability. So,
but it has to be something that the house did to the person, not that the tenant's animal or the tenant did to a person. The tenant has to have coverage for that. But if something at the house, like say there was a break in the concrete or something like that, that has to do with the house, or there was a lifted tile on the kitchen, which is part of the structure of the house, then the landlord's responsible and their property would kick in. But if it's the tenant's animals, the tenant has to have their own insurance.
If the homeowner lives there, they don't need renter's. Their homeowner's insurance will cover their dog in their home, and there is a clause and there is a liability. It's not a lot of money. I think the one that's in the policy that is here is like $2,000 liability for any kind of freak accident like that, like a dog biting a kid or something. So if the owner lives there, there is liability. You don't have to get additional homeowner's insurance if you're living in your own home and you purchase the policy. So.
Yeah, when I had my animal rescue, I actually didn't get the additional insurance. I was not covered for if, like, my dogs got out of the property. I was very careful, though. I mean, it never really happened. But the extra insurance is really unreasonably priced, so I never even got the rider when I was running my animal rescue. I was just very, very diligent about, you know, where the animals were and stuff like that, with people coming over to look at the ferrets, I'd put the dogs away, that kind of thing. But it was a little stressful, you know, always making sure that things were a safer environment, you know, because I knew I didn't have that that extra insurance, but it's not part of a standard policy, right? Well, at least not in Florida. Maybe in other states it might be part of a standard policy, but in Florida, to cover for your animals injuring somebody, a person or another animal, that has to be a separate rider to your homeowner's insurance.
Yeah, about 15 years ago, I was trying to rent a place for one of my adult kids. They were moving back here from Minnesota. And the first question that I was asked by any homeowner that was renting a house was, do they have dogs? If they have a pit bull, a German shepherd, a what's the big black and brown dog?
Sure.
Beautiful. Rottweiler.
Rottweiler.
Uh-huh. And there was one other one that I don't remember. You have to get special insurance before you can rent my house. And there was a list of dogs that they find to be more aggressive, and you had to have this special insurance. Otherwise, they wouldn't rent to you. Even if they said dogs were welcome, if it was one of these breeds of dogs, you had to purchase the special renter's insurance. So I did know about that way back then. But, of course, when I think of my little dog, I don't, you know, he's no pit bull. And he's no German Shepherd. He's like a little, he looks like, you know, the dog on Funniest Home Videos that hangs on to the mop so they mop the floor with him? That's what my Chewbacca looks like.
That's exactly like, you're right. I forgot about that. I've seen that video. It's hilarious.
That's just what Chewy looks like. And he's, I mean, when he's tired, if he sits in front of me and is staring at me because he thinks it's time for me to go to bed and I'm not going to bed yet, I'll say, it's okay. You can lay down and go night-night. And the kids crack up because his eyes get heavy and he lays down and falls asleep like I've just hypnotized him. So he, you know, it is what it is, but he did do what he did. So now I want to get on to the rest of this kind of not-so-nice story. Obviously, I was very upset to find out that he hurt a child. I'm not one of those kind of people who puts my pet over the welfare of a child. But everybody in the family that saw this little girl said she was fine, Mom. You know, we gave the mom peroxide and a paper towel, and she wasn't even bleeding. You know, it was like a little puncture wound on her chin. So Animal Care and Control shows up, and because I couldn't find the shot records and everything, Chewbacca got arrested and was incarcerated for 8 days at the Animal Care and Control here in West Palm Beach. Now, when the woman who came and did all the paperwork and took the witness statement and everything, did everything that she did, she said we had the choice to take him. This was Friday. We could take him Saturday. My daughter called around to see how expensive it was to put him in a regular quarantine kennel, and it was way out of our reach. So we took him to Animal Care and Control, which I have done things with before. I've taken feral cats. I've to be put up for adoption. I've dealt with them before. It's a big organization. They work with a lot of volunteers, and it's a good place to go to adopt a pet that needs a home, all that kind of stuff. And I am a proponent of places like this. However, when they got Chewbacca, one of the ladies said to me, you know, you're taking the chance of him getting kennel cough. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, it's very prevalent in the rescue and a lot of the dogs get sick. My little dog has kennel cough so bad that I'm giving him tea tree oil, I give him children's cough syrup, I've done everything to soothe him when he starts coughing. And it's awful. I mean, right now he's laying beside me, he's nice and calm, but if he does anything and exerts himself, he coughs for 10 minutes. So he also, when I picked him up on Saturday, he hates a leash. I don't know, maybe one of the little kids at one point in time when he was really tiny wrapped something around his neck. He hates it. I got him so he would tolerate a scarf around his neck so that I could put a leash on him when I needed to, but he just hates it, and I thought he'd been traumatized enough. So when we went to pick him up Saturday, they bring him out in a big cage like he's a ferocious lion, and the girls say to me, where's his leash? And I said, he doesn't like leashes. I'll carry him. And they both looked at me real stunned, and they opened the cage, and the minute I put, I mean, he was just looking for a way out, and you could see how scared he was. I mean, this is a little dog that when it thunders outside, he's in my lap, like in a heartbeat, just shaking all over. So he, I put my hands down, and I said, Chew, it's me. And he smells my hands, and his little eyes shot up at me, and right up into my arms he was, and had both paws wrapped right around my neck. And oh. I walked him out. He smelled so bad. He had inch-thick dog feces on all four paws. He was just filthy, 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 dirty. They put a chip in him. They neutered him, which I had wanted to do anyway, and gave him all of his shots again. But the worst thing is that and then she says to me, you can't bathe him for 10 days. And I said, are you crazy? He smells terrible. So all I did, of course, was let him run around out in the grass, and then I washed his paws. I didn't give him a bath because he's got an open wound where the chip is installed. But I was so upset. I mean, how long, 8 days, an inch, I mean, my car still has feces. Every time I get in it, I find another spot that came off of his paws or off of his backside that I have to wash in my car.
Wow.
And I was just, when I got home, I had to take off all my clothes and take a shower, and it was like, and I thought to myself, okay, and I'm trying to make amends in my mind with the fact that they're overburdened, understaffed, all of those things. But taking all of those things into consideration, this is an organization that is supposed to be caring for these animals. That's what people think. People think that if they call you because you're worried that a dog is going to get hit by a car because it's wandering in your yard or in your street, and you've seen it 2 or 3 times, it doesn't have a tag on it, doesn't have anything, and you look out there and you call Animal Care and Control, you think you're saving that dog. Isn't that what you think?
Yep.
You
yep.
think you're doing a good thing, and now I'm wondering if you are.
Well, I mean, Animal Care and Control is not a no-kill facility. You know, if an animal comes into them and they can't adopt it out within 10 days, unless it's a puppy, and even some puppies are at risk, the animal gets put down. It could be a perfectly healthy animal, and they put it down. So, I mean, it is heartbreaking when people turn in animals because they can't keep it or something like that, and this is a beloved family pet that in 2 weeks may not be alive anymore, and it is sort of tragic that it works that way. But, you know, this is why, you know, I'm glad when people do neuter, spay and neuter their animals, because there is such an overpopulation of animals. Now, you weren't breeding Chewy, but a lot of people that have animals don't get them spayed or neutered, and the animals continually have puppies or kittens or whatever. It's just such a drastic overpopulation of animals out there, and there's just not enough homes for all the animals that are happening. So spaying and neutering helps control the populations, and you know, makes it better for the animals, you know. But one of the things that astonished me is when I had the ferret rescue is something that you just said. I assumed that if you worked in Animal Care and Control, that meant you were an animal lover. And some people are. Some people there are extremely compassionate. They really do care about the animals. You can see that they get choked up when there's an animal that's fearful or something like that. You actually see the emotion in their face. But there's also a lot of people that work there that it's a job. There is no emotion towards the animals. This is a job to them. And it surprises me that somebody would go into that environment just the same way as it surprises me that some people go into the school system that don't like children, things like that, and we've talked about that before. But certain jobs really require certain emotional attributes. When you're dealing with children, one of the attributes is patience and caring. When you're dealing with animals, one of the attributes is patience and caring. So if you lack those two emotions, that should not be your calling. That should not be the line of work you go into. And I had seen a couple of the animal care and control workers that were very impatient. And here you're dealing with a very fearful animal, and they're yanking them around and stuff. And it wasn't that the animal was fighting them. The animal was afraid of them. So you yank them around, that's going to make them less afraid of you. Now you just made the animal more afraid of you, for God's sake. I actually said something the one time, and so the guy in front of me calmed down. But behind closed doors, what is he doing to this poor? It wasn't my dog. It was somebody else's dog. That he was being very aggressive with the animal, and you could tell the animal was petrified of him. And, you know, and that's when it, I was very upset. I said something to one of the women behind the counters, and she actually looked at me and she said, the woman said, not everybody who works here likes animals. And then she wouldn't say anything more. So, you know, but again, like in any other place that I've ever gone to, and we've talked about this before, that, you know, there are some people working in animal care and control that are wonderful, and that's why they're there, because they want to help animals, but not all the staff is. And they are overly burdened with the number of animals they have. I know that they also work with volunteers, by the way. So when we talk about volunteerism, this is another place. Any animal rescue or animal care and control, if you're a big animal lover, it's a very, very fulfilling and very worthwhile place to volunteer because they are generally understaffed. They need people who don't mind cleaning, taking care of sick animals, you know, that kind of thing. But, that's the minute you said you had to take Chewy to animal care and control, the first thing that popped into my head was kennel cough because it's so common.
Mm-hmm. So, but again, you know, the point is, and I'm not trying to rag on animal care control, I think that they have a job. And like Shelley just said and I said, a lot of it is volunteer. A lot of it is people who volunteer because they love the animals, but a lot of it is also people who take a job there and just take the job because it's a job that they can get. So a lot of mixed emotions about this and a lot of kind of unanswered questions in regard to the care that an animal receives when they're there. So I do think, though, that you all need to be aware of all the different things that are okay for you to do and not okay for you to do. So let's real quick remember what we just said about this. If you have a dog in your house and somebody comes in your home that you don't know and your dog hasn't hurt anybody and is pretty good little dog but is a little rambunctious or something like that, and you put the dog in a safe place, you are still responsible, regardless of the actions of the human. You are responsible for your dog's behavior. So a couple things that you might want to look into if you're renting your home is renter's insurance to cover you for the liability of your dog. If you are in your own home and you already have homeowner's insurance and you've recently acquired a dog, a pet. By the way, if your cat scratches a child and the parents are all upset, same liability. So, and how many little girls do you know think it's all right to just walk up and pick up a cat?
That's right.
All of them. Because to them, the dog and the cat is, you know, for them to play with. And of course, the dog and the cat have to be in the right mood. And a little kid doesn't know that. So, again, this is another opportunity for us to remind each other that certain responsibilities fall in our arena on a daily basis that we seem to take for granted and forget about. Number one, the responsibility of your child in a home that doesn't belong to you and strange animals, strange people, all of the above. It's your job to keep an eye on your child, not someone else's. And if you're in a place and you're doing something that you know you're going to be distracted, my input is to either leave your child at home with a sitter, another family member, whatever you need to do. But if you feel that your attention is going to be taken away, then your child shouldn't be with you, especially if they're, you know, little people. Because little people, like Shelley just said, are inquisitive and want to see everything that's going on, and they don't think about ownership. For them,
right.
The whole world is their oyster.
Yep, they want to touch everything.
They absolutely pot. And my little dog is adorable. I can understand why this little girl wanted to pick up my dog and cuddle him. I get it. On the same token, I don't want that happening again, and I don't want my dog hurt either. You know,
The bottom line is that people need to understand, and again, going back to these two shows I mentioned earlier, Judge Judy and Judge Millian, one of their stock statements that they make, and they say it in every case, all right, they look at these people and they say, you need to understand that regardless of how much you love your animal, animals are animals. They're unpredictable. They don't think like we do. They think like animals, all right? So they may be comfortable with you and your family, but they're not going to interact with strangers the same way they interact with you. The same thing is to the other party, okay? Just because you have a dog or a cat that loves it when you pull on their ear or hug them, you can't go up to a stranger's dog or cat and do the same thing because they don't know who you are. You might scare the animal and get attacked, you know. So it goes both ways, you know, that just because an animal is docile with you or just because your animal is docile, you can't approach a strange animal and expect the same behavior because, number one, animals are wild, so that their behavior can be unpredictable with strangers. And secondly, that, you know, when they're out of their element, when they're confronted with something that's unfamiliar, an unfamiliar person or a child that's very aggressive, you know, it could actually inspire some fear in the animal. They're just like emotions. I mean, they're just like human beings. Animals have a full range of emotions, just like human beings. So you have animals that are shy. You have animals that are very outgoing. You have animals that may be having a bad day. I mean, I've noticed my animals. My dog Marcus is the biggest, goofiest, loving animal. He's like 103 pounds. He's this big lummox, and I call him Goofy because he's just always sweet and almost like clownish. Like you look at him and he kind of runs at you, and he just looks funny when he does it. But every now and then he'll have one day where he's out of sorts and he's kind of like not being very playful or whatever. It passes. Maybe his stomach's bothering him or whatever, you know, dogs eat grass and that kind of stuff. But even he has days where he's like a little off, and then the next day he's back to himself. So animals are like people. They go through the full range of emotions, and if you make them fearful of you or you scare them, they're going to snap. Now, like you said, Chewy didn't snap to hurt this little child. He just snapped. He probably didn't even need to contact her with his tooth. I've seen that happen. I got bit by one of my own dogs once. He wasn't trying to bite me. He snapped at another dog, and I happened to be standing between the two of them, and he got me instead of the other dog. So, you know, that kind of stuff happens. But remember, dogs and cats are wild animals. You know, just because we've domesticated them, it didn't take out the fact that they're animals.
That's right. And I think another important fact is the fact that they can't articulate. They can't say, please don't do that, that hurts my stomach. Or they can't say, don't do that, that scares me when you do that. The only thing they can do is get your attention with a bite. And
right.
That shows you that they are displeased about whatever you are doing. And taking heed to that is your responsibility and paying attention. But, of course, if you are 5 years old, and you see this cute little cuddly dog, you're not thinking about that either. So, again, then that falls into the realm of mom and dad paying attention to what your kid's doing.
The other thing is that parents also need to be realistic about their child's behavior around animals. And the reason I say that is because when I had the ferret rescue, I really only had one bad event that happened in the, 8 years that I ran it. This one woman had come with her three children to adopt a ferret from me, and I had a big setup in the back. I had over 100 ferrets in one area, and I had them in each free-roaming areas. So I allowed – there was one area where the people could stand, and then I would go in where the ferrets were. So I would allow one child to come in at a time to interact with some of the ferrets, and she and the other two stood there. Well, this one kid kept picking the ferrets up by their necks and then dropping them. And I told the child three times, I said, you can't pick up a ferret like that. You're going to injure it. You know, so I showed him. 2 minutes later, bam. And he wasn't a little kid. He was like 8 or 9 years old. I mean, he wasn't a baby. He was certainly old enough to understand what I was saying, but he thought it was funny to pick them up that way because of how it would stretch their necks out. So after a few minutes, I looked at the woman and I said, okay, well, I said, we're not going to adopt any ferrets out today. I said, bring them back in a week, and I said, we'll go through another interaction, a training. This woman got bent out of shape. She says, no, I promised them I'd bring home a ferret today. I said, well, they're not understanding how to handle them properly. I said, bring them back next week, and I said, we'll go through another session, and I said, explain to him that he's got to be more careful with them. And she says, I'll make sure he doesn't handle them like that anymore. I said, well, I said, these are my ferrets. I said, I'm very protective of them. I said, I need to know before I adopt them out that they're going to be cared for properly. And I said, your son's not understanding how to handle them. And in my head, I'm going, and you're not saying anything. You know, I didn't say that out loud, but that's what was going on in my head. She thought it was, every time he picked the ferret up, she would laugh. So he thought it was funny. So he wouldn't stop doing it that way. P.S., they leave. This woman's like bent out of shape now because I wouldn't adopt the ferret out to them. And I didn't say no. I just said not that day. Next thing I know, I get a call from Animal Care and Control. This woman went to Animal Care and Control and reported that I had a filthy facility, that there were dead ferrets laying all over the floor. This is what she told them. So
oh
the
God.
Sheriff at my door hours later, with the and she shows me the report. And she comes in and she's like, where are all the dead ferrets? She says, this place is very clean. And, you know, but they did make me repaint the walls, and I had to do something. I had to make one change. They cited me on one thing, but they had no dead animals. The sheriff looked at me, and she goes, oh, my God. She said, you have an incredible facility. She says, the only thing I will say, though, she says, I want these walls repainted, you know, because she said there's too much of the sheetrock showing, and that's not good for them. But she said, other than that, she said, you have a beautiful facility here. She says, I guess this one was just pissed off you wouldn't give her a ferret. But, I mean, how spiteful is that? Instead of taking responsibility of her child handling an animal properly, she got angry with me because I wouldn't let her kid, you know, sorry, animals aren't toys. If this kid keeps a ferret up like that, he's going to injure it.
We need to touch a little bit on that, but I'm going to do it gently, and that is the fact that this is a time of lawsuits. This is a time of people making the assumption that, you know, they can get some money. It's a way to get a quick windfall, if you will. And that has altered a lot of people's behavior in regard to how they deal with things, because a lot of times, you know, that's what it's about. Oh, well, you know, my kid's really all right, or my this is all right, or that is all right, but, you know, they probably got insurance. So I think we should sue them, and indeed that's what happened. And it's a shame. It's really, really, really a shame, because now what that means is all the other conglomerates, all the insurance companies, all these places can make more money off of all of us when we're in a time of struggling to cover us and to take care of us in regard to frivolous lawsuits. And, of course, the ones that ones that get the biggest benefit from that are the ones that handle the lawsuits. So we've become a world of, well, as long as I get something out of it, yeah, I don't care if so-and-so makes this or so-and-so does this. And isn't that what you buy? I mean, if I heard this once, I've heard this 100 times. Isn't that what you get insurance for, to cover you? You pay for the insurance, don't you think, you know, that it should take care of a situation like this? Well, of course I do. I think that if there's really an issue and something that has really happened, you know, deems the possibility of a lawsuit like this, then I agree, of course. But I also think that somewhere along the line there has to be some conscious evaluation of what it is you're doing and what it is you deserve. So, and that
seems, you know, not blowing, you know, injuries out of proportion. Like some of the cases that I saw, either Judge Judy or People's Court, the people really were injured. I mean, they had terrible scars, and you see all the hospital bills. The one woman had to go through two surgeries, and she was really very badly injured. And she got a very high settlement. As a matter of fact, she could have gone outside of small claims court, and the judge even told her, you could have gotten a lot more for the particular scars you have. But the woman said she doesn't like suing people. She really just wanted her medical bills taken care of. But another, there were a couple of them on there that you couldn't see anything. And the pictures that were taken at the hospital looked just like surface scratches. Like, you know, this woman is saying this animal viciously attacked me and bit me. But then you're looking at the pictures, there's no puncture. It's just light scratches. And by the time they got to court, you couldn't even see anything. It didn't even leave any scars. And this woman is like, she says, I'm scarred for life and all this. And the judge threw the case out. She said, you're out of your mind. She said, you're making a big deal. She said, you know, people, she said, not everything is a lawsuit. She said, if you bend down and an animal jumps up on you and they accidentally scratch you, that's not a lawsuit, you know. She said, if you're permanently injured, you have to go to the hospital, you had to get tetanus or something like that. She said, that's different. But she said, you incurred no medical bills. All right. The only thing she had was completely covered, which was the emergency room visit, which was a big nothing, you know, because they didn't find anything wrong. And the pictures bear it out what the other woman was saying. She said, and the woman approached her dog. So it wasn't even the owner's fault. The woman walked right up, oh, is your dog friendly? Bam. The dog jumps up and lightly scratched her arm, you know. But that's what I'm saying. And these people, like you said, they look at a lawsuit, they look at dollar signs, so they speak hysterically. Oh, my God, I was attacked. I'm scarred for life. And then you look at the person and nothing. How was that traumatic that a dog accidentally scratched your arm? Really? You know, so they're just saying it for effect. And that's what really, really bothers me, because there are people that have been attacked by animals that were horrifically injured, you know, and you're responsible for this little injury to yourself, and you're not going to take responsibility for it and just walk away. No, you have to make it more than it is. So that's something that bothers me, because it's histrionic and there's no reason for it. People shouldn't act like that. They should be sincere and realistic. I got bit by a neighbor's dog when I was a little kid. My hand swelled up for 6 weeks. We never sued the family because it was my own damn fault. I leaned over to pet the dog. The dog saw something. I pet the dog every day, but one day it heard something down the block that scared him right while my hand was there. Bam, bit my hand. You know, we didn't sue the family.
That story. I remember you telling me about that when that happened. I mean, you know, not when it happened, but when we were talking about dog bites and stuff, you told me that story before.
Yeah.
I agree. But I also think, like I said, that we have to start paying attention to how we govern ourselves, how we watch our children, how we watch our pets, what we do. And I also think that if you are somebody who loves animals and you have the time and the energy and you think you could give something back to your community, I'm going to suggest that you go to Animal Care and Control, because they obviously do not have enough help. They obviously struggle with what they're doing there. Don't do it because, like Shelley said, just because you know, you're trying to work off community hours, or you're trying to do this, or you're trying to do that, which is the reason for a lot of our volunteers today, because high school kids have to have so many volunteer credits before they graduate. People who are on probation or parole or whatever kind of trouble that they've been in, they have to do volunteer hours at a nonprofit situation to help work off their punishment, and they have no desire to really be there, but they take it because, you know, they can add up their hours. All of these are not the right reasons to go someplace where the care of something that lives and breathes and eats and loves and gets hurt, that's not the place that those kind of people should be. If you really
right.
care about animals and you want to do something to make a difference, please check it out. I mean, all the ladies at the front, they're all nice. The lady that came out and told me that Chewbacca had had his neutering and that all that stuff was done, he's going to be a little, you know, out of it and all this kind of stuff, you know, she was very sweet. She had some medication for him, and she had already broke it up in pieces for me and told me what to do and everything. All that stuff was great. But I still saw all these other things, and the fact that my dog came home so sick really, really upset me in a place that posted, like you said, Shell, and they made it very clear that if I didn't pick up Chewbacca on the day that was designated, the next day he would be put to sleep.
Yeah, isn't
and
that
I get it.
FAS?
Yep. Yep. I get it. I do, you know, because they're trying to control the numbers. So I do get it. But again, if you're the kind of person who really cares.
Society.
I
mean, it's exactly what you just said. It's animal care and control. It's not the Humane Society. And people need to understand that animal care and control is, like you said, it's a very necessary agency. Every town has to have one, but they are not no-kill facilities. They're not humane societies. And that's part of their job is to control the overpopulation of animals. So they're very serious about their deadlines.
So I hope that if you are out there, I mean, so many people that I talk to on Facebook, their whole life revolves around their pets. I mean, we that listens to the show all the time, and she tells all these hysterical stories about her little dogs. And I'm put in mind of somebody that Shelley and I worked with at the Institute who is a horse lover and has dogs, and she's always posting pictures of the dogs riding the horse sometimes and swimming at the beach, everything, you know. They're her everything. And most people who have pets, they become a member of your family. And it's hurtful when you know you have to do something and things happen and you do have to do it. But I just felt like this is something everybody has to understand, because I didn't know. I really didn't know that something like that would happen. When I was a kid, if our dog bit a neighbor because the kids got too rough, and sometimes the dog isn't biting to bite. Sometimes the dog is playing and a kid gets hurt as well. I don't think that's what happened with Chewbacca. I think he got scared and he wanted this little girl to leave him alone, and he bit her. But sometimes it's purely accidental, because a little boy can play pretty rough with the dog and roll around on the ground, and all of a sudden, you know, a big eye tooth connects with your chin or your forehead. I've seen my kids do that with our pets. But I just want to make everybody aware of this, because this was a bad thing for us to have happen, and it gave me cause for a lot of worry for all different kinds of reasons. But I, you know, as usual, we made it through it. My my little friend here is back home where he belongs. Like I said, laying here, so I can use my chair. but you know, now I'm trying to nurse him back to feeling better. And I certainly have you know, some feelings about the little girl that got hurt, and I hope it doesn't also make her be afraid of dogs. That's another side effect of something like an episode like this, because that's a lot to lose out on when you're a kid, being afraid of a dog or a cat.
Well, and that goes to her parents. If her parents handle this properly, they can teach her to be more respectful of animals without being afraid of them. You know, fear is not a good emotion to have, because a lot of times it makes you act irrationally. But if you are if you are cautious, that's different. You know, just to be more careful and cautious and respectful of animals is good, you know, to understand that they are unpredictable, but not necessarily to fear them, you know, just to be respectful of their space and that kind of thing. So, and that's up to the parents as to what they say to her about this incident, and that they don't blow it out of proportion and make it more traumatic to the child, you know, because the parent's reaction, the child is always going to kind of follow the parent's lead. So if the parent is calm and like, well, it's not a big deal, oh, it's just a little tiny mark, you know, nobody's even going to ever see it, you're fine, then the child is going to go with that. But if the parent is going, oh, my God, you know, that animal could have done this to you or you're scarred for life, now the child is going to go with those emotions. So they're really going to follow the lead of whatever the parent says to them. So in a case like that, it really is on the onus of the parent to be reasonable and rational and to help their child to have the appropriate reaction when an incident like that happens.
Yeah, I will agree with all of that as well. And I do think that this is, like I said, that's why I wanted to do this show today, to give everybody the opportunity to think about the different things that can happen if you've taken on the responsibility of a pet or a child. You know, take it seriously and realize mm-hmm. that there are extenuating circumstances when you have both, and they're your responsibility as the adult, no one else's. So very sadly, you have to say that, because otherwise people seem to think that a lot of things will just take care of themselves, and that's just simply not true. Things do not take care of themselves. They are your responsibility, and you have to do what you need to do in order to manage the care of a pet and a child. So on that note, though, I want to say that I am looking forward to tomorrow's show, and I'm excited about being able to share with all of you all the different things that Izzy shared with us yesterday. As I mentioned earlier, he was one little thing I want to share with you, and it may save the day of your very young person. One of the guy that runs the camp stood up and he says, well, you know, you can't teach like a 5 or 6-year-old, you know, to demonstrate such diplomacy and know what to say back, even if you give him the you know, the verses to say and everything. He says, so what if I say, you know, I'm picking on you, and I say, you know, you look like you're gay or something, or you look, you know, you're stupid, or you do this. He says, Izzy stands up there and he goes, so? And I could just see a little kid looking at you when you say something so derogatory to him and going, so? And we all laughed, and I said, that's the perfect answer for a 5-year-old. So? Because it's intimidating. It doesn't give the other person anything to work with. He just said, so? Had his hands folded in front of him, just like a little kid would do. You know, or somebody walks up to you and says, you know, you're ugly and you stink. That's another one. You know, kids are good at saying that. You stink, you smell bad, don't sit next to me. What do you say? Well, first thing, probably you should get up and move, because why have that altercation if they don't like you? Get away from them. But secondly, if he just look at them and say so, and it works perfectly, because you take the wind out of the sails of somebody who wants to be antagonistic towards you. So it was great. I loved it. So we will talk about that at length tomorrow and go over this wonderful manual that he presented to all of us yesterday, because it's got all kinds of information in it, and we will talk about it. I hope everybody's for the Christmas holidays, and I hope it's a joyful time for all of you with as little stress as possible, and I want to wish you a great day today. It's a little chilly here in South Florida today, but feels nice. So you want to say goodbye to everybody, Shel?
Sure. Goodbye, everyone. Have a wonderful day, and see you all tomorrow. And Rainey,
bye-bye,
have a wonderful talk later.
Thank you. God bless, everybody. Have a good one.